Almost didn't come. Almost went to the beach.
Microphones are live.
Okay, thank you. Well, now the microphones are live.
Good morning. Welcome to the August 19th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You'll notice that Supervisor Lenthal isn't here this morning. He's ill, and we wish him a speedy recovery. With that, Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
Changes to today's agenda are added items on consent is A16, a letter transmitting plans and specifications clerk's file for the fall 2008 asphalt overlay, various roads in the county, 1st, 3rd, and 4th districts. Recommend approval and instruct clerk to give notice of the bid opening date set for September 11, 2008 at 3 p.m. Amended item on consent is A10, a request to approve a contract with Joyce Ulrich in the amount of $47,000 for consultant services for the Workforce Investment Board. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending this item be amended by replacing the transmittal and staff report to revise the other agency involvement section. The replacement pages are attached for your approval. Amended items on hearing is item C3, a hearing to consider an appeal by Daryl and Nola Twisselman, Oasis Associates of the Planning Director's determination concerning an application for certificates of compliance, CO7-0311, for two parcels of approximately 25.047 and 31.39 acres in the rural land use category, located east of the intersection of Sydney Street and Flora Street, east of the city of San Luis Obispo, 3rd District. Recommend denial of the appeal. Item C4 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Kenneth and Rosemary Twisselman, Oasis Associates, Inc., of the Planning Director's determination concerning applications for certificates of compliance C07-0312 for two parcels of approximately 21.72 and 4.524 acres in the rural land use category, located east of the intersection of Sydney Street and Flora Street, east of the city of San Luis Obispo, 3rd District. Recommend denial of the appeal. And C5, the hearing to consider an appeal by Herbert and Diane Filipponi, Oasis Associates, Inc., of the Planning Director's determination concerning applications for certificate of compliance, C07-0313, for two parcels of approximately 3.373 and 3.21 acres in the rural land use category, located east of the intersection of Sydney Street and Flora Street, east of the city of San Luis Obispo, 3rd District. Recommend denial of the appeal. Staff is recommending items C3, C4, and C5 be continued to November 25, 2008 to address the continuance request submitted by the applicant's agent. Under an added item for a closed session under pending litigation, conference with legal counsel, item 18, San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District versus Erich L. Russell et al. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements. And those are the changes to today's agenda.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we'll move forward in the agenda. The first item on the agenda is the consent agenda. And I'll open it for public comment on items on consent. I have no request to speak. So I'll close it and bring it back to the board for action and ask my colleagues if they have any items they would like to speak to. Supervisor Ovid?
None at this time.
Supervisor Gitson?
Quick comment on A2 and a quick question on A15.
Okay. Supervisor Sajian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to ask a question on A7, but I don't see anybody here from Public Works, or I'm not seeing clearly. If they're not here, I'm okay.
Oh, we do. Okay.
Okay.
And that item again, sir?
Seven.
A7. Okay, thank you. Mr. Gibson, item A2.
Item A2, And item A15 is a sheriff's item, and I'm wondering if I see the sheriff out in the lobby there, my reading glasses don't help focus that. But on item A2 is a lease with the Cayucas Elementary School District that will place a county library in a renovated classroom on the campus of Cayucas Elementary School, which if you've driven by, you'll see is under major remodel at this point. This lease is going to end up doubling the space of the library and at the same time reducing the overall rent cost to the county. And it's going to likely mean that we're going to have a wonderful library in Cayucas for many, many, many years to come. I just wanted to thank the folks who worked on that. Mr. Edge in the admin office, Ingrid Warren and the folks in General Services, a lot of folks, and of course the board and of the school district, and George Erdley, the superintendent of Cayucas School. It's a great example of a partnership that's going to really pay a lot of dividends and improve the quality of life in the community of Cayucas. So I'm very pleased that we have that before us today.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Item A7, Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of this item, reducing the hours of parking on Halcyon Road, but I probably would have preferred that the hours be extended rather than from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., maybe a little longer. Is there a formula behind the 2 to 6 that you prefer?
Brian Chapman and with Public Works, the 2 to 6 a.m. is what we normally use as our stock when we're dealing with these types of issues. If we will continue to monitor the situation, if this doesn't reduce the parking there and the overnight parking, we will come back to your board with a different action.
And the other thought I have that those are the hours that we have probably the least number of patrol on the road. If it's via highway patrol or... Would the sheriff deputies have the capability of tagging those cars, or strictly highway patrol?
The sheriff can also ticket those cars, yes.
Okay. And as again, for both departments, and I stand to be corrected, those are the hours probably you have the least number of folks on duty. Would this be then not a priority, and shouldn't be a priority if there is somebody's life in danger, of course, but in order for us to force it to show that we're serious, are we communicating? Do we have their blessing that during those hours to really give us a hand to
I
make it?
I didn't talk to either agency specifically on this item. Like I said, this is the language we've used in the past to address these issues, and there hasn't been a problem before.
Okay, but you guys will keep an eye. If we have any problems, you bring it back to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Back to you, Mr. Gibson.
Thanks, sir. On A15 is an item to... receive a $385,000 federal grant from Department of Homeland Security, I guess coming through the state. And I'm sorry I didn't get to ask a couple of questions yesterday, but in the staff report, Mr. Hedges, there's it indicates that the $385,000 is split into about $220,000 of operating expenses and $145,000 of capital. I was just curious what sorts of operating expenses are being paid and what's our prognosis for future revenue stream there? And also, if you could comment briefly on what the capital items are going to be used for in particular.
Certainly, to the extent that I can, Pat Hedges, Sheriff Coroner. The operating expenses are monies going towards the establishment of a mobile data computer system for the patrol cars so that they can access information without having to go through the dispatch center. It allows them to... check on information on vehicles for registration, stolen status. It also allows the dispatchers to provide them with the information over the mobile display rather than having to broadcast the information and then they have to write it down. And so the majority of that $280,000-some, I believe, goes towards the establishment of the infrastructure for that program. We have other funding to actually cover the costs of the mobile data computers for the cars.
And are these being installed now, or are we yet to see those deployed, or are those coming?
They would be coming. This is the okay. This is the initial funding to establish the infrastructure from the coordinate with the computer-aided dispatch that we currently have in place. The other equipment provides us with the ability to, in some respects, be able to monitor some activity at the Diablo Canyon power plant so that we don't have to rely upon telephone calls, things like that. It gives us opportunity to remotely view activity that may be going on there. This is funding that comes from a buffer zone protection plan that is funded by the federal government. The license plate reader is something we're doing in conjunction with the California Highway Patrol that will, in an automated process, scan license plates to check for stolen vehicles that are out there on the highway, and I believe that covers it.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Certainly.
Very good. I have no more comments, so I'll entertain a motion.
Of the consent agenda.
Okay. Right. It's been moved and seconded.
With the changes.
That we approve the consent agenda as amended. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Sajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye. With that, we'll move to the presentation calendar. I need a motion.
Move approval of that presentation.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the presentation calendar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I'll turn it over to Dory Duke from Human Resources if you would like to introduce your item, Dory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I am Dory Duke here with Marcy Goodell from the Human Resources Department. We are happy to be here to assist the board in your tradition of recognizing employees today for their 20 years of public service. The individuals being recognized today are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. Recipients, if you're, once your name is called, if you could come down and stand between the podiums, Marcy will give you your pin, and then we'll have you all stand in a line and approach the board so that they can offer you their congratulations, and then remain standing up here so that we can take a group photo. Okay? Okay, our first employee being recognized today for 20 years of public service is from Information Technology Division, Leland Armitage. From Mental Health, John Bedwell. From the Planning Department, Karen Nall. Public Health, Lisa Neeson. From the Sheriff Coroner's Office, Kelly Schramber. From Social Services, Alex Alvarado. From Social Services, Danita Hollinger. And again from Social Services, Michelle Reed. Approach the board.
There was one more on the list, Dory. Is there one more?
Did I miss anyone? How are you? Okay, stay.
Come back in the center. Slide back this way.
Yeah, if you slide back that way and stand in front of the board, then we'll take a group photo.
Photo
off here. Do you know how to work the equipment?
Okay. We can move this way. Let's center.
We're flexible.
We'll easier to take direction.
All right. Press the little button. Oh, it went off.
concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Quality control here. Continuous quality improvement. That's
bye, Mr. Seabach.
That was quick. Just waiting for them to move the party out of the chambers. The next item on the agenda this morning is public comment for items that are not on the agenda, and I do have some requests to speak. The first being David Weissman, followed by Rochelle Becker.
Good morning. My name is David Weissman. I'm the Outreach Coordinator for the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, and I don't know if they knew this was coming, but I haven't been able to clear a room this quickly since I did stand-up comedy in late October of 1983.
And actually, that was in anticipation of you commenting.
Was that? I wouldn't disappoint them. I have no humorous, well, nothing funny this morning, actually. But a reminder, if you will, of the earthquake that struck in Chino back on the 28th of July. And although that quake epicenter was located relatively far from the San Onofre nuclear plant, it certainly did attract a lot of attention. And one of the things that was most interesting in the press was the failure, and we heard some mention earlier today by the public services people about cell phones and cell phone communications and being linked with people, was the failure of the cell phone system when that earthquake occurred. They were immediately, the Verizon, the AT&T, inundated by telephone calls that they hadn't expected, and it overloaded the system, causing it to shut down for hours and hours during what would have been or could have been a greater disaster. We in San Luis are not entirely unfamiliar with this. If you'll remember the earthquake, the San Simeon quake in 2003, we also, as our Christine Ferrara of the Public Utilities San Luis pointed out, lost our cell phones because the rattling knocked the disks off the towers. Now, that assumes we fix the hardware. What's left is how do you fix the software of a system? An overload is something that happens in their office somewhere. And what we'd like to request at the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility is that all the upcoming drills involving Diablo Canyon and emergency response, and we know that there are drills, as we heard at the last Nuclear Regulatory Commission hearing, scheduled for the end of September and the end of October. Using this new information that the cell phone system can quickly become overloaded and shut down, we would like to see that scenario required to be placed into this drill, whether it's prepared or a surprise drill, that they have to consider what would happen if the public lost the use of a cell phone system. We've often been told that emergency response, if the primary systems fail, there are what they call informal systems of notification. If the sirens don't work, we'll push a button and call everybody. That may turn out not to be possible now, we see. So that is our one request, is that in light of this new earthquake evidence, all future emergency planning exercises here do have to take into account the potential failure of the cell phone systems. And, you know, you can imagine the overload if parents try to contact their children or they're separated from spouses, and that would be a concern of ours. So when the upcoming exercise hits in September and October, let's see what this system can do. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Weissman. I'll pass that request along to Mr. Ron Alsop, from our Office of Emergency Services. Rochelle Becker, followed by Jane Swanson.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Supervisors. Actually, it's not just cell phones. It was also landlines that were impacted in the last earthquake, so we'd like to request that cell phone and landlines. The Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility also made this request in Southern California on July 31st, directly to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission at the end of cycle meeting for San Onofre. The first response from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was that the inspectors on site had satellite phones that worked. While we're glad the inspectors have satellite phones that worked, we really are more concerned about the public. The second response from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission came on the 18th, just this week, and they called back to say that they thought this was an excellent idea, but that the licensees are responsible for designing the drills. And my assumption is that the county is also responsible for input in designing these drills. And in San Luis Obispo County and in San Diego County, it's very important that our communities are very active in designing what will happen in a drill. We are most concerned that we don't plan for a number of phones being out, but what we plan for is the number, but not where they'll be. My suggestion would be that the drill begins and that you have a map of the county and you just take some darts and you throw them and assume X number of phones are absent in that area for this drill. I don't think planning ahead for certain areas not having phones is going to help the county. You need to know at the very last second that those phones that you're counting on don't work and what are you going to do, and that's where those areas are. So we suggest that it be random. We suggest the county be actively involved, as once again we suggest the county be involved in the Energy Commission study on the costs, benefits, and risks of continuing to operate these aging reactors in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Jane Swanson.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Jane Swanson, spokesperson, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. I'll start by not repeating what Rochelle and David said, but by saying, me too, okay? So that was well spoken, and I agree with every word they said. I wanted to speak about the transformer fire at Diablo Canyon and the implications for the county. My request of the supervisors is that you as a body stay on top of information about this transformer fire as things are investigated and uncovered. Both yourselves as a body, the emergency planning services, local hospitals, the people who work at Diablo Canyon, and the general public have a right to know the details about this fire. Although the NRC classifies transformers as, quote, non-safety, unquote, equipment, for purposes of safety of the people that work there, it's definitely related to safety. The very nature of a transformer is that it generates heat, and there are it's cooled by oil, which is very flammable, and that's what happened here. The transformers, for some reason, not yet known, overheated, the oil ignited, and that produces not only a fire, but an explosive event, hence the damage to nearby buildings, and I just read in today's Tribune damage to another transformer of some type. So the questions that I would like to encourage the supervisors to make sure get answered by the investigations will be done, of course, by both PG&E and the NRC. One question is, was part of the cause of this fire related to human error? Specifically, was there a lack of training for the folks that supervise those things? Was it perhaps a failure to inspect the transformer? Other transformer fires throughout the industry have revealed that often there are warnings, like overheating of the transformer or a variation in the voltage. So there are warnings sometimes, not always. So the question is, were those warnings looked for? Were they present or were they not even looked for? Number two, was mechanical failure a part or all of the cause? That's an aging nuclear power plant, and so I'm sure PG&E will be quick to know how old the different parts of that transformer were. At some point, it all needs to be replaced, and obviously, they waited too long to replace this transformer. Third question is, what steps will be taken to prevent reoccurrence? Transformer fires are a growing problem throughout the nuclear industry, and Diablo Canyon has had transformer fires in May of 2000 at Unit 1, and there were two fires in 1995 also at Unit 1. That information comes from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I didn't make it up. It's in the records. Number four, and the last question I'm asking you to ask, had workers been present at the time of this explosive fire, what would the consequences have been? There are videos of transformer fires available at Google Video. You can go to Google Video and put in transformer fires. And it's clearly a very violent event. And again, since windows were broken in a nearby building and damage happened a ways away, if workers had been present at the time of this event, most likely there would have been serious injuries.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Your time is up, and
thank
could
you.
I ask you to submit those questions to the clerk, and we'll have them.
Yes, I'll email them because this is scribbled on.
Very good.
I'll make a nice copy,
okay.
And that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Supervisor Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm appreciative of your wanting Mr. Alsop to look into the telephones and all that, but would it be possible to have him come back and report to us publicly?
Actually,
so the public will also
Mr.
be aware
Sajjan,
of that?
On the email this morning, Mr. Alsop sent out an email concerning one transformers and then the second about how they incorporate the telephone issue into the practice. Having been at those practices, I know that there's all kinds of backup systems besides phones. You have other organizations that provide communication systems. But Ron's here.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I think that Ron had sent an email to you this morning that you may or may not have had a chance to read. Because one of the supervisors had raised the question after getting emails from the speakers. And as Ron pointed out, we build into our plan the operating assumption that phone service will fail. So it's not a matter of planning for what if it may fail. Our operating assumption is that the phone service won't be available for use during particular kinds of disruptive emergencies, and so we make our plans on that assumption. You know, the underlying reality is that what we are planning for, by definition, are emergencies, not routine events, and you cannot eliminate any kind of risk in an emergency. Our role is to make the plans as to how we will prepare and respond to emergencies, including catastrophic events. And catastrophes by their nature wouldn't be catastrophes if they didn't include massive disruption of the area and the population. And so if the underlying theme is how do you ensure that every member of the public can somehow have communications abilities following a catastrophe, the answer is you can't. It's as simple as that. There's no magic bullet. There's some unless you're going to propose that everybody buy satellite phones, and then I suspect the satellite system might be overwhelmed. But you know, the reality is you cannot make communication happen. You prepare for the worst. You make some certain operating assumptions in terms of how are we, as the governmental agency, going to respond when those events occur. And Ron, if you like, can speak in greater detail to how we operate and how we plan to operate.
Thank you, Mr. Edge. I think, in response to your comments, absolutely, we can't anticipate everything, but when we have a situation where something does occur that was unanticipated, we can learn from that. And Mr. Alsop is here, and if he would come forward and address specifically the question relative to what happened in San Onofre and the cell phone system being overloaded and the landline system also, if you could just speak briefly to what we've done in this county or what we anticipate doing to ensure that what happened down there is addressed in our emergency planning here in San Luis Obispo. Mr. Alsop?
Good morning, Ron Alsop, County Office of Emergency Services. As Mr. Edge noted, in our earthquake emergency response plan, we presume the phones will fail, both the landline phones and cell phones. And we have a number of redundant backup systems as far as emergency operating personnel. If we have an earthquake in this case or any other disaster, and there are no communications, the presumption is the damage is serious enough they need to report to the Emergency Operations Center. And in fact, with the San Simeon earthquake, we had to make one call out. Everybody else automatically responded, and the landline phones were up. The cell phones did go down for a short period of time in the South County area, And the one call-out we had to make is because a department head was in his office and thought a heavy truck went by. He didn't realize there was an earthquake. So we have that system in place. It's in our emergency plan. As far as backup communications, one-on-one that we would rely on to get a hold of people is one of the systems is the old-fashioned ham radio operators. We have more than 70 in the county that come in handy at times. In fact, one of the 58 fire that burned 107,000 acres a number of years ago in the North County, we actually burned down radio repeaters, including ambulance radio dispatch repeater. So we put a ham radio operator in each ambulance. There's a ham radio operator station in our emergency operations center. And when a call came in for ambulance service, then the ham radio operators dispatched the ambulances. It was just as quick as the regular radio system. Of course, for outside communications, we have satellite uplinks, and as well as internally within the county, all the city emergency operations centers have satellite phones. So we have a number of redundant backup systems. Worst case scenario, we can even put out through the emergency alert system notices to people. We need Supervisor Patterson at the emergency operations center. So we have a number of ways to get out the message, down to and including four-wheel drive vehicles to drive to people's houses and whatnot. So that's all included in our emergency planning process. In the past, we have tested these things and earthquake drills. It's been a number of years since we've had a peer earthquake drill. We need to have another one of those. And as far as future scenarios for the upcoming federally evaluated nuclear power plant exercise, I can't know what's going to be in that scenario since I'm what's referred to as a player or a participant. If I knew it was going to happen, then it would defeat the purpose of having the drill of testing us. So indeed, phones may go down, they may not, I don't know. And the scenario is complete. There's a team of federal, state, and local folks involved in developing the scenario, so it's done well ahead of time, as is the rest of the planning process for the federally evaluated exercise. Did I miss anything?
Mr. Patterson, I wanted to reiterate to board members, I've had the privilege of being out there a number of times for these practices, both major and minor practices, that there is observation rooms, there is areas where you can come in and see what goes on as a supervisor, and I would recommend it highly that you get out here. Is this a major this year then?
Yes, it is.
It is.
Federally evaluated major.
To see the different aspects of the emergency plan and how it takes care of. I mean, I know during the earthquake, down to the point that you don't have communications, that we had CDF people going door to door in the rural areas, actually banging on doors, checking on people, seeing on things. So this whole emergency system is pretty well done. But I would recommend that each board member get out there. The chairman does have a responsibility out there, but it would not hurt for each of the supervisors to see that.
Thank you, Ms. Hovitt. Thank you, Mr. Alsop. We'll follow up with any other questions, and you can address those, and we'll get back to our speakers on that as well as the public. So thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. That concludes my request to speak on public comment, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. We'll move on in the agenda. Item C1, and Ms. Swanson, we will get some answers to your questions separately. Madam Clerk, would you introduce item C1, please?
Certainly. Item C1 is a hearing to consider an amendment to Title 8 of the County Code, the Health and Sanitation Ordinance, requiring sellers of real property within the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area to retrofit plumbing fixtures with low water consuming plumbing fixtures at the time of sale, 4th District. This item was introduced on June 10th, 2008, and recommend approval.
Okay. Thank you. I see Mr. Caruso here this morning to present the staff report. Mr. Caruso and Mr. Wolkin, your backup, I guess, huh?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. This is a hearing to consider an amendment to Title 8 of the County Code relating to retrofits of plumbing fixtures at the time of sale. This ordinance will affect the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area that's outlined on the map in the light gray. It includes the urban area of community of Napomo and the rural area of the Napomo Mesa. There was a great deal of stakeholder input into this process that was sponsored by Supervisor Asajian over the past several months. Your board originally introduced this ordinance amendment on June 10th, 2008. Basically, at that hearing, the ordinance was approved as written, with the addition of some database language that allowed the county maintained database to show who and who is not in compliance with the ordinance. And you also set that hearing for the final hearing for today. But one of those things, at the last minute, there was some confusion about language in the exemption section, 8.92.040. The language in red was problematic in that it has given the planning director discretion over the exemptions, and it was pointed out that number one exemption, exempting the 1.6 gallon per flush toilets, is not discretionary. So we have decided that that language needs to be changed in order to make everyone feel comfortable with the final result. And in effect, what we would be asking your board to do is take out that language in red, and this section would now simply read with the paragraphs, subparagraphs 1 and 2. So the recommendation would be to change that exemption language as shown on that previous slide, to reintroduce this ordinance with that change, and to continue the final hearing to next week. That concludes staff comments.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Asajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Caruso, can you go back to the item where we're removing the title? And by removing that, the level of comfort we have that is in number two.
Correct.
The planning director's discretion is within the number two, so it's still in the body of this ordinance, but it's not misleading anymore.
Correct.
And I want to thank staff for their agreeing with us and move this forward for next week and bring it back as corrected. But I'll make that motion when we have heard the public speak.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Asajian. Are there any more questions of staff at this juncture? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public, and I do have one request to speak. Mona Tucker.
Good morning, and thank you for hearing this ordinance, and thank you, Supervisor Asajian, for all your help with this, and to county staff, especially James Caruso. There's been many of us who've put a lot of time and effort into this, and I've been very grateful for the amount of help that we've received from all levels of county involvement with this. And my only plea would be for you to approve Mr. Caruso's recommendation. I think with the magic of word processing, et cetera, that there must have been a little relocation that went on there that kind of changed what we were looking for, or did change what we were looking for. So if his suggestion, recommendation is good with you, then it's good with us, and thank you very much.
Ms. Tucker, would you please state your name for the record?
I'm sorry. My name is Mona Tucker. I'm a resident of the Arroyo Grande Mesa.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you. One other request to speak on this item, Richard Margetson.
Richard Margetson, voicing my same concerns I have with the Los Osos Ordinance. The Los Osos Ordinance is actually in place now, and as a realtor, we've been working with it. It's not working. I've been tracking the number of closings compared to the number of certificates that have been submitted to the county, the verification certificates. They're not matching up. Two of my recent transactions, the home inspectors, I waited till the exact end of the home inspection. The home inspectors did not know that this ordinance was in place. I had to bring it up to them, have them go back and check everything in order to fill out the certificate. Coming in, they didn't know about it. I know you had a lot of input from the real estate community in Napomo. But for information purposes, California Association of Realtors Political Action Committee opposes all point-of-sale ordinances or legislation. Always have. Always will. I wish we'd had a little more input from some of the conservation groups around the county. You still don't have a way of making sure this ordinance is complied with. There's a sentence in the actual language I'm going to bring up again. Under Section 5, the seller shall give written notice to the transferee of the requirements of this chapter prior to the change of ownership. A signed copy of the certificate and a written notice of retrofit requirements shall be included in the transfer documentation. I still would like to know what that means. What transfer documentation and what is provided? Escrow companies have nothing to do with this ordinance. Nothing. They don't want to have anything to do with it unless they're forced to, like they are with the smoke detector requirement in this state. I know you're going to pass this because you want to get something on the books, so at the end of the year, this is one of the accomplishments we've done, an ordinance for Los Osos and Napomo. But if we're going to be completely effective, and all the time staff has spent on this, it needs to be complete. As an example, the notifications that went out from the planning department to the about the Los Osos ordinance and to the contractors and plumbers talks about the low flow toilets and the shower heads, but in both publications there's not one mention of aerators. This is incomplete at this time. It's not effective. I'll leave it at that. My time's run out.
Thank you, Mr. Margenson. That concludes my request to speak on this item, so I'll bring it back to the board and ask staff if they want to speak to the issues that Mr. Margenson had raised. I am personally interested in knowing how the real estate industry was noticed, inspectors and so forth, so we know this is on the book. So is it possible to, so they know that this ordinance is in place? Mr. Caruso?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. The ordinance is effective. There's 22 certificates have been issued, and there have been sales that have been missed. I've been informed of them by some of the realtors. Learning curve is going to take a long time. That's just the fact of life. When we originally had this ordinance was adopted, we sent notices to as many of the professionals that we could think of and that we could find, home inspectors, realtors, and plumbers. We also met twice with the local Realtors Association on the coast, which included, audience included realtors and other associated professionals, including home inspectors and title officers. So the word is out, but we need to continue to get that word out. Education and outreach is always important and will continue to be important both in Los Osos and Napomo for quite some time. As for the aerators, you know, sometimes we miss aerators. Aerators are not a major part of the program. In fact, some people say new aerators don't save money, so we're not emphasizing that part of the program. However, it is in the ordinance, and there are some plumbers and home inspectors that, as a rule, will automatically change all of the aerators in the house because that's part of the package that they offer to the homeowner. Section 5 on transfer document, we've answered this question before, merely means that a certificate, a retrofit certificate, needs to be in that paperwork that the new owner gets at close of escrow. We've all bought houses. And we know that you get a stack of paper acknowledging everything that you've done or that has been done for that sale of that house. This is just another one of those pieces of paper. And that, I think that's it.
Okay, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you. Mr. Caruso, have you done particular outreach to the title companies on this?
Not separately. It's just part of the group of affiliated professionals as part of the realtor groups.
And do you have plans for more outreach one way or another as this and or the Los Osos ordinance ages here?
We're going to probably have to do some outreach at the point where the board will want to see this ordinance back next year, because we want to hear of the things that need to be changed or the things that we need to address. Perhaps some of the language that we heard comments on today needs to be addressed in the next go-round.
And how you say you've issued 22 certificates. How many sales do you figure have been missed?
I haven't checked recently. I don't know.
But you say you have missed some sales.
I've been told. I've had realtors call saying they didn't know about the ordinance.
And so what does the department do when you get that notification?
We inform them of the ordinance, see what we can do about getting that retrofit done post-sale, which has not turned out to be very successful, and basically use it as a outreach opportunity.
All right. When are we due to see this again? April?
It's going to be, is it April? I don't recall. It's spring of next year, I believe, is when you asked for it to come back.
Okay. Thank you.
One thing, if I can, and this is what's happening now. When you say go back and try to get it done, what we're seeing now is like building permits that aren't being finished, and some of these things that we try to go back and get done tends to cause a lot more issues and problems than trying to get it done ahead of time. So my suggestion would be that if you're finding these things, then that outreach, that networking needs to happen now, not next year. Because the issue is, you know, the next time somebody transfers, and oh, by the way, your retrofit's not done in here, you're dead in the water until you do, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it causes more issues than it does to resolve the problem.
Sure.
And Supervisor Sajjan?
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was just going to say I think it is important that, we let the realtors know, maybe make another attempt to send a letter to all licensed realtors, and I know that's not going to be 100%, and it will take time for everybody to get up to speed on it, but sounds as though there are still people out there that haven't heard about it, and sending a letter to all licensed real estate agents, and I wouldn't just focus on regions like Los Osos or Napomo, because they all seem to work all over the county with multiple listings and that sort of thing. If you can talk to the real estate organizations in each community and address them, and just continue to make the effort to get the word out there. I just got another request to speak on this item, but we did close public comments. So, pardon? Yeah, and so I'll not honor that request at this point. If you want to talk to staff separately, you may after the hearing. But anyway, Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I agree with what my colleague had to say, but we need to include title companies with all our communications. I think probably the buck stops there. If that's part of their check mark, and that might be enough.
Yes. Mr. Margetson, if you have an issue with staff, you want to talk to us afterwards, you may. We have closed public comment, Mr. Margetson.
They have nothing to do with this documentation.
We have closed.
You don't want to get it right. Call any escrow company and ask them if it's part of the paperwork. Any of them.
Okay.
Let's consider the educational portion that we alert all concerned. But I want to make a motion that we continue this item for next week, bring it back with the corrections as requested by staff and myself on C-17.
Mr. Sajjan, you need to say that you're going to reintroduce
that. Okay.
Thank you for the translation, Mr.
Okay, and Mr. McNulty.
Well, I just saw Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. McNulty, would you... Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Supervisor Sajjan. I believe the motion should explicitly state that we're reintroducing the ordinance today as amended, pursuant to the change that we saw on the overhead.
And that will be my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, second. Very good. We have a second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we reintroduce this item next week with the revision suggested by staff. And that requires only a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, if I might just add, especially those who took the time to be from the South County, I'll be working with you as the year goes by, and anytime we have any cracks that we need to be aware of, we compile a list that when we revisit this item as what it is, and not wait till a year goes by and we're all busy doing what we are. And if we have to bring it back earlier than a year, I'll be happy to work with you to be sure that we're not making your lives more difficult than as is with the economy and the market and everything else. So the door is always open to communicate and see how best we serve your needs. And we, as I said, we don't have to wait for another year. If it's a real difficult task, then if it has to come to us much earlier than that, be happy to work with you and staff and my colleagues to be sure it's happening.
Very good. Thank you. We'll move on to item C2. Madam Clerk, would you introduce that item, please?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider an appeal of the South County Road Improvement Fee by Larry and Cheryl Lane, 4th District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Mr. Marshall.
Good morning, Honorable Chair Patterson and Supervisors. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. The item before you is a road fee appeal in the South County Road Fee Area Number 1 of Napomo. The appellant is Larry and Cheryl Lane, and the project is San Luis Obispo Building Permit Number PMT 2007-02885. It's a construction of a secondary dwelling unit. The location of the project is on Scenic View Lane, approximately 1,800 feet southerly of its intersection with the Eucalyptus Road. The appeal points: on June 27, 2008, the appellant sent a letter to the county clerk of the board appealing a $10,337 South County Area 1 road fee associated with the building permit. In their letter, they addressed two points of contention, stating that they should be able to be considered to have the road fees waived. Public Works responded to the appeal points within your staff report and do not find their appeal meets the basis for adjustment as outlined in Section 13.01.050 of the County Code. Therefore, staff is recommending your board deny this request, and I am available to address any questions you might have.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Are there any questions from members of the board for Mr. Marshall? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public, and I do have one request to speak. Cheryl Lane.
Good morning. My name is Cheryl Lane, and my family and I currently reside at 1685 Scenic View Way in Napomo. Our roots run deep in this community as my two children, a firefighter for the Oceano Fire Department and a pre-med student at UCSB, are the fifth generation of my family to be raised in this community. In July of 2001, my husband and I purchased 17 acres at the end of a dirt road at Scenic View Way in Napomo. Our goal was to improve the piece of property so that we may build our home on it, house our family, and enjoy our life here in Napomo. It took us over 4 years to complete these improvements. During the course of this process, we constructed and installed a paved road from the intersection of Eucalyptus Road all the way down to the end of Scenic View Way, where it deaded end. It was in excess of 1,100 lineal feet of pavement on Scenic View Way. As you will see noted in your appeal point number one of your recommendation letter, we paved the roads in our subdivision at considerable expense. These road improvements were not a requirement of the county for us to complete our project. In fact, we were only required to provide an aggregate-based gravel road to satisfy the conditions of the project. Yet, we were told by the County Public Works Department if we constructed this new road to county public paved road standards that we'd be able to dedicate this road to the county and therefore provide not only the county but also its residents with a paved road at no expense to the county or the taxpayers, a substantial benefit. This non-required road upgrade provided a value to the county and its residents monetarily in excess of $50,000. Once we completed these improvements and offered them to the county, much to our dismay, our offering was declined for acceptance. We were told that the county did not have the resources available at the time to accept and maintain the new road, and therefore we were required by the county to provide a private road maintenance agreement in which it stated we were required to maintain the paved road ourselves. And several months ago, we awoke to the sound of numerous tractors and bulldozers which had begun moving dirt at the end of our private cul-de-sac. After some investigation, we had discovered that this road construction was part of an extensive road development, phase two of 31-lot cluster housing subdivision, Villa Park 2. The new roadway was to connect our private road at Scenic View Way to provide a primary road access to the newly constructed 31 Cluster Home subdivision. In fact, the new roadway provided an ingress and egress from the new phase as part of their new construction requirements. Additionally, we discovered that its developer had applied for this construction permit back in February of 1998 and had kept filing extensions for completion until finally obtaining approval in January of 2006. We were never provided with any notification of this new construction and do not understand how this roadway ingress and egress bureau requirement or even allowed that passage take place on a private roadway which we are responsible for the road maintenance of. This was a very costly paved road to install and thus will be quite costly to maintain, and even more so now with the new traffic pattern created by the new road extension. As you will see as noted, appeal point number 2 of your recommendation letter, the unit will be occupied by family members and will not result in additional impact to the roads. We have reviewed the county's statements in regards to the need for affordable housing. San Luis County is in need of housing that is affordable to a wide range of individual families. Secondary dwellings can help meet these needs, often utilizing existing infrastructure, energy, and efficiency due to size, and usually have little impact of existing neighborhood characteristics. Many secondary dwellings can fit easily into the backyard area of existing lots, and we encourage property owners to build secondary dwellings, especially in urban areas, and that was taken directly from your website. We had decided to pursue this option, opposed to building a single standard family dwelling on another piece of property nearby to the house for our grandparents. We understand that the road improvement fees are based upon the type of construction, and in this case, we are considering our new construction as a single family. You're considering our construction as a single family residence, and not looking at it simply as a secondary dwelling. Yet it is still only a secondary dwelling. Therefore, we ask that it also be taken into consideration when making your fee determination. Additionally, the county has estimated the value of our new construction at approximately $130,000, which we feel is an escalation of 25% by this current market value in light of our construction costs. Our county planning and building fees for this project are currently in excess of $8,194, and now the county has proposed an additional $10,337 in new road improvement fees, which is 125% of the permit fee, and would create a total of nearly $19,000 in fees, which is nearly 20% added on to the construction costs for our construction. When we inquired at the county offices as to the estimated fees required by the county prior to application, we were provided with a printout of fees at the time of application. At neither time were any road fees listed on our printout or even mentioned. Though we realize the necessity for an imposition of new road improvement fees on all new projects, we feel that $10,337 is an extreme excess for the special circumstance case in which we have contributed over $50,000, which has been realized by the county. We are in great hopes that you will also realize what we feel is a grave injustice that we have already experienced and detailed above, and that you will consider in your determinations. In light of all the aforementioned project information, we respectfully request that you please reconsider your determination of road fee costs allocated to our development and find that special circumstance road fee adjustment be allowed on our behalf. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Lane. With that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board for comment and action.
Questions, if I may ask, of the staff. I know that when you have a subdivision and, you know, it's your choice to keep it gravel to meet the CAL FIRE requirements, and it is your choice to blacktop it if you choose to, you know, just add so much more to your neighborhood. But that on its own does not make it a private road. It's still a public road, correct?
Supervisor Sajin, Glenn Marshall. In this case, in the Lane's case, they did a three-lot parcel map, and it's located about three parcels back from south of Eucalyptus Road. Eucalyptus Scenic View Way was a private road and still remains a private road. Their three-lot subdivision, they were required to put in gravel road standard and then offer for dedication to the public the roads, the right-of-way. We could not accept it at the time because there was still that portion between their project and Eucalyptus, which was, I believe it was offered, portions of it were offered, if not all of it, but it was not brought to county standards at the time. And even the Lanes, when they came in and improved it and paved it, it still wasn't to complete county standards. It did not meet the minimum width, and we had some drainage issues. So we did not accept it into the county maintenance system at the time. Mrs. Main, when she came up and gave her presentation, her testimony, she had mentioned tract the Villa Park number 2, 2262. That is an adjacent, well, it's not adjacent track, but it's a track just to the west of their project. And they did indeed tie into Scenic View Way, and all those roads are offered. And so at this time, we could probably accept Scenic View in front of their parcel into the county maintained system, because now we have a direct link to county maintained. If that answers your question.
Yeah, it does somehow, but I still want to know if Scenic was private, what's making it now public simply because it's coming up to the specs? Is that with the will of those who live on Scenic Road?
In order for it to be public, accepted by into the public maintenance system, it has to meet county standards as far as pavement width, shoulders, drainage. It does. There's a portion of Scenic View Lane that the mains did not create, the existing portion that they just improved by paving it. It still does not meet our county standard. Specifically, we have some drainage issues because it's located in a sump. So therefore, we're not going to accept it because it would be a liability.
So if the new subdivision is up to the specs,
mm-hmm.
correct, the Lane subdivision, it's not because of the issues you're speaking of?
The Lane subdivision is almost an island. We can't accept we need contiguous connection between roads that we accept and county roads. And so that portion between Eucalyptus and the Lanes, we never accepted it because, number one, it didn't meet county standards. Therefore, we could not accept the Lanes into the county system because it would have been an island.
With the connection, you're able, if they want to come back into the system, to accept into county maintenance.
From the backside, this track 2261 has improved. Make sure I get the right track number there. 2262, excuse me. Has improved it, has offered it. Now we could accept that portion in front of the main.
Which is typical of us when we approve a subdivision to build the roads to the specs, and then we accept it, and obviously they bill it no expense to us,
mm-hmm.
but then the maintenance becomes of expense to us.
Yes, that is true.
So there is an opportunity to bring Lane's subdivision into the picture and accept the into our maintenance program.
Yes.
Okay, I'll see if others have questions, otherwise I'll...
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to confirm that the piece of Scenic Way that is the Lanes is up to county standards. It's the other piece of that that's not.
That is correct.
And the other track, the Villa Park 2, was conditioned in such a way as to allow ingress, egress over a private road?
They had I'm not that familiar with that project. I think they had opportunities. They had to do secondary access, and I think there was a couple different options they had, and they chose to go to Scenic View, is my understanding.
Yeah, I guess the nature of that we may be heading in the direction that renders all that moot with acceptance into the county system. I think that's an important part, and as Supervisor Shajan, I'm sure, will explain, the road impact fee really doesn't speak to Scenic or to anything that's going on in the Villa Park track. But it seems to me that our disposition of this, one way or the other, should take into effect whether this is going to be accepted into the county system or not for maintenance, given the imposition of the traffic off that other track going through what currently is a private road, unless someone can show me that there's some agreement or offsetting compensation that's been provided there.
I think we probably have two issues in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
One is what the appeal, and the other is accepting their subdivision to maintenance. And obviously, if there is a subdivision behind them that's going to also impact their road, definitely, then we got to make the effort to bring them into the county maintenance system. So I trust that you're going to look into that favorably and make it happen.
I will.
Ms. Lane, this is always an issue, and I hate when I saw you walking to the podium with that beautiful smile, I hate to see you go away without it. But this is also always, just last week we had to yet deny another request, simply because we go to the community through the circulation committee and look at all the fees as how we're going to solve some of the problems. I trust you 100% that it is for your grandparents. And probably there will be a time they won't be driving, so there won't be adding any more trips. But the whole idea is then what comes later. And when we work with the community in your own backyard, so to say, as what to bring to the board for an acceptance level, the fees, the reasons, and all that, the whole idea is to how we can solve our infrastructure problem at what cost to every new structure that comes on, if it's secondary or primary. Now, if you had chosen to have the secondary attached to your existing building, you'll be exempt. But when you choose to do a secondary dwelling, that's what the red flag comes up and the fees kick in. And again, all these fees go into the improving of the infrastructure of major arterials rather than what we think about something serving a subdivision. So we, with all due respect, I'm going to deny your request is and approve the staff's recommendation. It's never a fun thing to do. It does trouble me somehow, but that's the way we put a system in place. And if I was to be able to weigh with you, and I can't speak on behalf of my colleagues, obviously they can't speak for themselves, we have to go back and probably waive everybody else that has been in front of us for a reason or another. The logic is there, but the real heart of it is that we do want to raise enough money and equally from all developers of all kinds to be sure that we're going to do something about the infrastructure that suffers so terribly in Nipomo. With that, Mr. Chair, I move staff's recommendation.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that we approve staff's recommendation, and I just want to comment as part of a discussion. This is a tough decision to make, but we do need to be consistent, and we've had this circulation plan in place for many, many years, and everyone that builds another residence down there contributes towards the improvement of the greater road infrastructure in the Nipomo area. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a big bite for a family to take oftentimes, but as Supervisor Sajjan said, it's really the only way we have to raise the revenue to improve the road system down there. So,
Mr. Chair, if I may add, probably there are others in the future want to bring similar causes forward. I wish they talk to me first to share some ideas, because there's a cost attached to it for them to appeal an item, and I'll be happy to communicate with them the past, the history, what's going on, what are the reasons. Maybe at that time they'll choose not to and save themselves a couple $100, whatever it is that we charge. Just a comment for the public who are listening to this conversation.
Very good. Thank you. With that, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That concludes our morning session, and we will now move into closed session. I'll open it to public comment on items on the closed session agenda. I have no request to speak, so I'll close public comment and ask Mr. Cash what he has in store for us this morning in closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wyatt Cash, County Council. Your board will be meeting on items listed on the agenda in closed session for approximately 30 minutes.
Very good. Thank you. And I do want to comment to the listening public that even though we heard on our consent calendar changes this morning that the hearing items this afternoon, there is a request that they be continued to a date certain. However, since they were noticed, we will be meeting, reconvening at 2 o'clock, opening these items for hearing and taking public comment, but there has been a request that we continue them to a future date. So I just want to let you know that. We will reconvene at 2. We'll have public comment on items not on the agenda. Then we'll open the afternoon hearing items and act on those, and that's what's in store this afternoon. So with that, we'll adjourn to closed session.
Your microphones are live.
How about us? You don't have that button.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the afternoon session of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. We'll have a report out of closed session. Mr. Cash.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Wyatt Cash, County Council. Your board met in closed session on items listed on the agenda. Took no final action, so no report is required.
Thank you. We do have some hearing items this afternoon, but before we begin with those items, we'll have public comment, and I do have some requests to speak. We'll begin with Pat Bauer, followed by Patricia Wilmore.
Good afternoon. My name's Pat Bauer, and I'm the program manager for the EOC Adult Day Services Program that's currently located in Templeton. I'm here today representing another of the Area Agency on Aging programs currently serving seniors in our area. The EOC Adult Day Services Program is a social model day activity program specifically designed to meet the needs of a rapidly expanding population in San Luis Obispo County. That population is those seniors with memory loss, symptoms of dementia, and/or a specific diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. We provide a day of activities that help stimulate and maintain cognitive and physical functioning while providing our participants with a secure place to enjoy companionship and a sense of belonging. We provide our services to whoever qualifies for the services and has the needs, regardless of their ability to pay for the program. I know that others have stood here and discussed the rapid expansion of our senior population in this county, and I think we welcome that expansion. It means that our family members are living longer, they're remaining with us longer, our friends are here longer, and people who are choosing to retire here come here with a true appreciation of our area instead of a desire to change it. But inevitably, as our senior population grows, so will the number of people needing the more specialized care of social day activity programs. If advanced age and health problems put people at risk, the isolation caused by memory loss and dementia only increase these problems, and they present new challenges for our family members, our caregivers, and the community. Research has shown that more than any other form of treatment, participation in a social day activity program helps Alzheimer's dementia patients maintain memory, communication skills, and delay the institutional placement or placement in a nursing home. And it helps their family caregivers maintain their own health and well-being. It gives them a respite during the day. It makes it possible for them to work when they need to be still working to support the family and their elder person. I thank you and the many organizations that have worked for us, supporting our program and our continuing efforts to open an Alzheimer's Day activity program in San Luis Obispo. We are continuing in those efforts. I certainly know that times are hard financially and that we all face many difficult decisions about funding priorities and how to best serve those with the most urgent needs. But EOC and the Area Agency on Aging are committed to keeping our senior programs open because we feel they're an important service to our community and important for a generation of people who've worked hard, done so much, and deserve to spend their last years in safety and comfort. I hope you will keep them in mind as you plan services for the coming year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bauer, and we very much appreciate the efforts of your organization. Patricia Wilmore, followed by Jim Becker.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Patterson and members of the board. My name is Patricia Wilmore. I'm the local area manager for governmental relations for Pacific Gas and Electric Company. As you know, PG&E did declare an unusual event at Diablo Canyon Power Plant at 12:12 a.m. on Sunday, August 17th. An unusual event is the lowest emergency action level as designated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for emergency response. There has been, of course, interest, I'm sure, among your constituents and yourselves about this event. So we thought we'd come today and we'd bring to you our top man at Diablo Canyon, and that is our site vice president, Jim Becker, and he will update you on the event, and he will also talk to you about our plans going forward. So thank you for this opportunity. I have also brought the business cards for both Mr. Becker and myself, should you want to contact us for more information.
Very good. We'd appreciate having those, Ms. Wilmore. Your timing is almost perfect. We did have someone speak to us this morning in public comment and raise some specific questions, which I will forward to you because we would like to have those answered. So thank you for coming this afternoon. Mr. Becker?
Sure, thank you. So as Patricia said, I'm here to give you a brief update as to the event of the weekend at Diablo Canyon Unit 2 and our current status and our plans going forward. So shortly before midnight on Saturday night, Unit 2 at Diablo Canyon was at full power, and we had an electrical fault occur on the main bank transformer on that unit. Main bank transformer takes the output of the electrical generator at the reactor, raises the voltage, and then sends the power to the grid. So that's its purpose, and it failed due to an electrical fault. When that failure occurred, the protection system sensed the fault and automatically shut the reactor down. The reactor shutdown went normally, as we would expect those to occur. It also actuated our fire protection system, so the sprinklers, or the deluge system as we call it, actuated and started spraying water on the transformers. Our on-site fire brigade responded to the fire alarm, and they showed up at the scene. They used the fire engine that we have locally at the plant, and they extinguished the fire using water and foam. It was about 25 minutes from the time of the alarm to when they put the fire out. Because of the fire, we did declare an unusual event. The control room personnel made that decision. That was the right call. Per our federal regulations, a fire within the power plant lasting more than 15 minutes is an unusual event, so they did make that call and those notifications. So briefly, and nobody, fortunately, nobody was injured when this happened. Moving forward to today, Unit 2 remains shut down. We are now in what we call a cold shutdown condition, so we have cooled the reactor down a great deal because we are going to take advantage of this time offline to perform some extra maintenance in addition to doing the repair of the transformer. Major activities today are we are doing electrical testing of our electrical equipment at the plant to make sure that our repair plan for the transformer will be successful and we'll be able to put the plant back online. In parallel with that, we're also doing an investigation to the event, both what were the causes of the event and also looking at our response to it and how we handled it. In looking at the cause of the event, we are involving others in the industry and people from outside Diablo Canyon but who work for PG&E who have expertise in transformers and the like, and we are doing the cause analysis with those folks. That cause analysis is going to take some time. And so I'm not going to speculate as to what we will determine as to the cause of it, but we will determine the cause. I do want to note that the transformer that failed had been in service for approximately 8 years. That's not very long in terms of our industry. These transformers are generally rated for 20 to 30 years, depending on the specific design. We had replaced our transformers on Unit 2 approximately 8 years ago. So these had been in service for about 8 years. As I said, we're doing our investigation. We will not restart the unit until we are satisfied that we've done the right repairs, we've learned the lessons from the event, and that it is safe to start the plant back up. Last thing I'll say is we do have a schedule for doing that startup, and we are working to that schedule. It's not our normal policy to publicly state what our schedules for returning the unit to service is, because there are people in the power trading industry that could trade on that information unethically. But we have determined a schedule. It's safe to say we will not be returning the unit to service this week, but we will be pursuing our repairs. That's the end of my comments. I would open it to any questions you might have. I'll also offer to you that if you'd like myself or somebody to come back at some point to give you a further update, we're very open to that. Thank you.
Very good. Mr. Becker, Supervisor Sajjan does have a question.
Just one, if I may, Mr. Chair. You said this was 8 years old. What is the life expectancy?
For a transformer like
for
that?
Yeah.
I would say, generally speaking, 20 to 30 years. It would depend on the specific design. These transformers are made by a company called Aline. It's an Austrian company. The transformers on Unit 1 are a different design. They're a General Electric design. But generally, it's 20 to 30 years. When we replaced these around 2000 on Unit 2, it was because the existing transformer was almost 20 years of service.
And within those 20 years, do they require maintenance?
Yes. Our transformers get maintenance every refueling outage,
which is
every 18 to 24 months.
Okay. And you have a record of all that?
Absolutely. And part of our investigation will be to look at those maintenance records, and we'll see, is there maintenance that is there maintenance we should have been doing that we weren't doing? Or in looking back at the data, was there something that we missed that could have told us that, you know, we had a problem developing. So far, we haven't seen anything like that, but we're by no means done looking at that.
Thank you.
Yep.
And again, thank you for coming down and sharing that information with us. And please, as I said, we'll forward those questions to you. I don't have them in front of me this afternoon, but I'll certainly do that. And absolutely, anytime you feel that there's information to share with the community, this is a good forum to do that. Right. And you have an open invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce Payne, followed by Chris Alvey.
Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. This is kind of a follow-up on what I had to say 2 weeks ago when I didn't have copies for all of you to look at. This table five of the history from October 2004 to October 2006 shows the averages at the bottom of these 28 to 30 wells. You can see some of the wells were only tested in the last 2 years, so there's two new wells, so was ordinarily 28 wells. The point that I wanted to bring out, and I brought up last time, is that the 7L3 well is down by San Ynez and 4th Street, I believe. This well was re-drilled, but it was re-drilled in the same location. It is now sealed correctly. And if you look at the chart, you'll see that in 1982, when that well was drilled, it was less than 5 milligrams per liter when it was first drilled. That was an unsealed test well, drilled for a quick down-and-dirty test of what prevailed at 82, and those wells were supposed to be sealed, destroyed, and abandoned. Abandoned correctly means you fill them with cement, and that's the end of that. So that the top is sealed well also, so it doesn't get surface pollution. Now you can see how quick it jumped up. The nitrates jumped up real fast because that was a very wet season back then after 82. But then it ran along right at 15 here for a solid test period. It was 14 milligrams per liter. Suddenly, 1 month before the ACL hearing, it's at 52 milligrams per liter. That's 2 milligrams per liter over the average nitrate concentration coming out of a septic tank, which runs from 45 to 55 milligrams per liter. So 45 to 65. So 50 milligrams is the average. Anyway, the point that I want to bring out is those wells have not been tested since 2006. You will notice at the bottom, October 2006, it was a half a milligram over drinking water standards on all 30 wells. It's time to have those tested again. If you look at how the nitrates started to come down, even on this chart, after they were re-drilled in 2000, and then we have some sort of a thing going on here. The rest of the wells, I have charts. There's charts available for all 28 wells. And there's a lot of the charts that have a big gap in them where they were not tested at all for a long period of time.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. Quick question. Have you checked with Public Works to see if they have any updated information on the wells?
Yes, I should have brought the letter. They mailed me a letter on my public records request and told me that they're not responsible for testing any wells. 2701 doesn't say whether the CSD can continue that program or not. The CSD, you may know, is in bankruptcy, and Malanus predicted $6,000 to run a test. They should have been tested in April of 2007 and again in August 2007, again in April 2008, and now it's August 2008 and they haven't been tested again. So it's this is vital information for spending millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars on a project that's totally unnecessary, and this has been going on for a long time.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Chris Albee, followed by Al Barrow.
Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. I'd gotten a copy of this technical memorandum dated June of 2008, and they made mention of various greenhouse gases and chemicals needed for the various treatment types. And the anyway, I was able to go out and do some homework here, and I found a treatment plant that is going to services about 16,000 people. It's pretty close to the Los Osos plan. And make a long story short, all these plants seem to use ferrous chloride, 12 gallons a day. That's 4,380 gallons a year. Bleach, 125 gallons a day, for 45,625 pounds, I'm sorry, pounds of, or gallons of bleach, and then sodium bisulfite, 80 gallons a day, 29,200. This wouldn't matter except on the, in the memorandum, excuse me, they mentioned that septic tanks need no chemicals whatever. And it looks to me like chemicals are completely kept out of the equation when these memorandums have been written up. A couple of points here. I keep hearing about the county picked up the project, and my information is that it has not. Pavo Ogren seems to like the Broderson site for disposal. And his statement on that was no objections from expert opinion, but he didn't tell us who the expert opinion was. Another conflict of interest here, I've been told also, engineers that designed the project received one-third of the total cost for the entire system. So where is the incentive to keep costs down? You straighten me out if I'm wrong on any of this stuff. The regional board can issue and charge for discharge permits, but you have to have a discharge. So that might be a good reason for them to keep the sewer plan as opposed to a on-site plan out there in front. If all the septic tanks are commissioned, this is from an arborist here, that there's a real good shot of extensive tree die-offs for any trees that can't get their root systems down past 100 to 120 feet. I can think of a few people who'd be really happy about this. There's a county board.
Thank you, Mr. Albee. Your time's up.
Okay. Can I have some of these questions answered? Or?
I see no questions. Supervisor gets
Mr. Albee, will the best way to do that is communicate with the project team and through the EIR process. So we'll, if you wish to submit those in writing, we can get those to the project team. You can go through the website or send it to my office. We'll be happy to forward it on to them.
Okay. But if I'd like these questions answered in a public forum. I just have to come back the next time and continue? Or?
We'll get those answered through the project team.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Albee. Al Barrow, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good afternoon, supervisors and public. My name is Al Barrow. I'm from Los Osos Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I want to quote today from one of the county's prior experts. He worked for one of the soil companies that do the drilling and boring to test to see the separation of groundwater from leach fields and the conditions generally in Los Osos. And he says, I know they're going to hit shallow groundwater at many locations during trenching. And when you dig below the water table in this sand, it continues to cave in at the water level. If this is the case, how are you going to install pipe? And I think he's referring to gravity here. Has anybody done a soil investigation to anticipate what will be encountered? Who is going to pay for this oversight when this type of problem is encountered? I am just wondering if you know whether this issue has been addressed or not. And in conversations with this gentleman, and he worked on these programs back when Brown Caldwell was in charge of the first county project for the sewer in the 1980s, he recommended that each street be bored so that you would know what the water conditions are. Because if you try to lay a gravity pipe and submerge water, you're going to have a lot of trouble. And you can talk to ARB, which is the main contractor for the gas company, and they've tried that out there, and it's been very expensive, time-consuming as well. So you don't know what you're getting into. That's the gravity system. With a directionally bored step system, you won't have that problem because you don't have to dig, because you're drilling parallel to the surface, and it's going underneath. So if you hit water, you won't have a problem. That's the difference. And I think he wants to make that point because the engineering up to date has not included that in there. He would recommend that you probably have two or three borings on each street. And if you go out there today, you'll see the crews for the water company, they have four shutoff valves and one fire hydrant shutoff valve at every intersection. That's a lot of investigation. Now, Fugro did some coring, but it was of the streets and it wasn't of the water. So I think we're missing a little bit on that. So I will submit this as you requested in the EIR format, and hopefully your staff will get an answer to those questions, because we have clay lenses. They're bowls of water and they're just all the way. You just don't know where they are. 500 feet down the street, you can have high ground water and it can be dry in the next level. So it's a very big problem. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Richard Margetson, followed by Lindy Owen.
Richard Margetson, I came this afternoon. I was here this morning. I came this afternoon to apologize for my outburst from the back of the room. I think it was born out of frustration that no matter how we sometimes approach the process, whether it's speaking here at the lectern, submitting comments, meeting with our supervisors, meeting with local advisory councils, sometimes the facts just aren't becoming a part of the process. I would hope that would change in the future. There's a lot of valuable information that comes from the community. Staff is not 100% correct all the time. 90%, I'm sure 90% of the time they produce reports and accurate information. But that 10% of the time is when people are affected, or something that comes before you may have an effect on people down the road, or the implementation of something that you're trying to accomplish. So at some point, you know, it's frustrating for us to be here, make a comment, have a question about that comment from the supervisors to staff, and whatever staff says is what you take as the law. That's part of the frustration that erupted this morning, and I can't say that I'm not going to do it again, that it won't happen again. And it might not be me, it might be somebody else. The process, you know, I wish it's as open as it can be right now, but if you have somebody at the lectern who's given you information, it would be nice if you asked follow-up questions once in a while of the person that's there,
especially if they have expertise in that area. And I'm not just talking about myself, I'm talking about other people that come here. It might make the process for you a little easier, and maybe things wouldn't have to come back before you repeatedly and be readdressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Lindy Owen.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. Listening to some of the Diablo discussion this morning about the fire that they had and the reaction from Diablo and from concerned citizens in the county, I would like to again bring up that word sustainability, which is basically survival into the future, because as we design, we need to design smart, or we might as well just assume that it's all going to break down and not perform for us when we have no electrical power, et cetera, that can be generated from the powers the way that we're doing it currently. Diablo has the opportunity to put wind generation, wave generation, and solar powers on the air, land that they use, and they could slowly phase out their nuclear. And every time I send my bill in, I say, no more nuclear waste, because that's really what we're talking about is it doesn't even pay for itself. When you look at the cost analysis of nuclear energy, it does not, it barely breaks even. So I wanted to go on with sustainability and again talk about my favorite town, Los Osos, which has the potential to be a green, sustainable community, but not with a conventional sewer. Conventional sewers are obsolete. They're dark age technology when you're designing wastewater treatment and water reuse. And for our county team to continue pushing for an old, outdated, failed system that was rejected for many, many, many reasons, mostly because it would have cost us $300 and it would have not done a very good job treating our water. So I'm begging that we look at sustainability, think of Los Osos as that experiment that can be used to have a septage treatment facility, small scale, that could do the coast, have ponding systems, use biology, use windmills out there to generate it. We have all that potential, and if this county chooses to go that direction, you will be so proud of what you can create. Lastly, I wanted to say what a STEP system is. It's a septic tank. It takes all the household waste. It processes everything with no electricity, no chemicals. It's in a safe holding tank as long as it's, you know, up to date. And what a STEP collection is it takes the liquid off of that septic system, 15-minute pump every day, takes all the excess liquid off. It goes 4 to 5 feet underground, as Al Barrow was speaking, directionally boring, and it takes it out, and it's pressurized, and it takes very little energy to get that water out to a treatment plant, where also our septage could be pumped on a 5-year basis and put into that system and broken down, and we'd have no sludge. We'd have a complete full cycle. Our water could be recycled. There's nothing but good that could come out of a good design. So I hope you keep helping us push for it.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Owen. That's my last request to speak on public comment on items not on the agenda. So we'll move forward then with our afternoon hearings, and I'll ask the clerk to introduce item C3, please.
Item C3 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Daryl and Nola Twisselman, Oasis Associates, Incorporated, of the Planning Director's determination concerning applications for Certificate of Compliance C07-0311 for two parcels of approximately 25.047 and 31.39 acres in the Rural Lands Land Use Category located east of the intersection of Sydney Street and Flora Street, east of the city of San Luis Obispo, 3rd District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Ms. Manson, you're here to speak on staff's behalf on these items.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Board Members, Joe Manson, Planning Information Services Group.
I would like you, Joe, if you would please speak a little bit louder.
All right, thank you. Wanted to let you know that we did get a continuance request by the applicant's agent, Oasis Associates, that came in on August 12th, and that's noted in your amended staff report. They've requested a continuance And we've set a date of November 25th, which was the next available time on the board's agenda. And we do concur with that request, and that's our recommendation to continue the hearing to November the 25th.
Okay. Do I have any questions for Ms. Manson? If not, I will open it to the public because we do have a request to speak from a member of the public. Alan Thomas, please come forward. And if you would like to, Mr. Thomas, you can speak to all three of them. The request is to continue all three hearing items to, I believe it was November 25th, Ms. Manson? Okay, November 25th.
Thank you very much, Alan Thomas, San Luis Obispo. Yeah, I can speak to all three, I think, at once. I would like, I don't know if this is appropriate, I see only three of you there, but I recommend that you deny this continuance because this is a last-minute continuance. And in addition, I feel strongly that the appeal has practically no merit. The staff report that was done prior to this for the refusal of these of granting unconditional certificates of compliance was accurate and very clear. And I think requesting this under the basis of the 1893 Subdivision Map Act is simply an attempt by the clients here to circumvent the current subdivision laws, the environmental laws, and the public. And I just the staff is very clear that their application does not meet the standards as its design and improvement was never authorized for approval by any law, nor was it approved by the Board of Supervisors of the county. And they cite California Supreme Court decisions that back them on this, that there's just no way they can get an unconditional certificate of compliance based on this 1893 Subdivision Map Act. They have other avenues. They can go for a conditional certificate through the current Subdivision Map Act, through the current environmental process and the current situation, and make it a public process. And they can get their legal status that way. But this way makes no sense. The staff report is absolutely clear. And we have citations from the California Supreme Court in similar cases already decided that said you can't just take that map, that 1893 Act. It was all they did was draw lines on a map to lay out parcels. There was no approval process of what might be built there, any review of any possible subdivisions that might be built at that time. That's why the Supreme Court has already said this type of going around in the back door to get legal status for these lots and to get the certificate is not allowed. It's been refused numerous times. So I just think this is a waste of time. I think you ought to deny the continuance and then vote to deny the appeal and send the money back to OASIS, save them $750, which I guess it's going to cost them to make this continuance. So I guess my comments, like as you say, apply to all three, and I guess that sums up my opinion. I don't know if it's appropriate for this board today to do this with only three of you there, but I say let's stop wasting time and money. This is the third time I've been involved in something with OASIS and Ms. Florence where there are last-minute continuances. There was she worked on that Johnson Avenue surplus property. The county spent over $100,000 with her company. She withdrew a project at the last second because it was mishandled. We still don't know what happened to that. But I just feel this is an inappropriate request at the last minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. That's my only request to speak on this item, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. We do need to take an action on this. Supervisor Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hear the concern of the neighbor. I believe the property on Johnson Avenue, that was continued because upon the request of the board who was in charge of giving direction to Ms. Florence at that time. I can see your point, but everybody's entitled to their request to continue. We have the discretion to continue or not to continue, but since we publicized it that this was requested to be continued, otherwise might have drawn other people to the hearing. So I would move that we continue this item as
date certain, November 25th, I believe.
And I'll second that and just carry on that. I understand the frustration of these kinds of continuances, and while it's within our discretion, I guess, to deny this request for continuance, I think out of common practice and the courtesies of this board, it has been generally the case that we will grant them. So that is the reason for my second.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And we'll have to carry out this process for each item. Ms. Manson, would you, well, I'll ask the clerk to introduce item C4, please.
Item C4 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Kenneth and Rosemary Twisselman, Oasis Associates, Inc., of the Planning Director's determination concerning applications for Certificate of Compliance C07-0312 for two parcels of approximately 21.72 and 4.524 acres in the Rural Lands Land Use Category, located east of the intersection of Sydney Street and Flora Street, east of the city of San Luis Obispo, 3rd District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Ms. Manson?
It's Mr. Chairman, Joe Manson, Information Group. We do concur with the applicant's request for a continuance, and we have set a continuance date of November 25th.
Very good. I have no request. Well, do you want to speak again to this item, Mr. Thomas?
I'm not going to give the same speech. I guess maybe just a clarification then. I understood there was this request for continuance, and I came to the meeting because I was told, you know, you never know. Maybe those are denied. Is this just a formality, really? Do you ever deny these? Or I mean, I see not too many people came but me, so maybe I'm the only one in the dark here about how this works. I thought there was a chance maybe it wouldn't be continued and everybody would have to, you know, you'd have to be ready to go. But am I mistaken? Is there a way this you can? Or maybe I'm just learning the process.
As Mr. Gibson said, and I don't want to take any time from you, 3 minutes, if that was your only question, I'll be happy
That's
to
my
respond.
Only question. Yeah.
For the almost 10 years that I've been here, common courtesy, professional courtesy, we always allow the continuation, if requested by the applicant, who's paying the bill. And then I don't recall one that was not.
Okay. And at the same time, that's why we hold this as a public hearing rather than simply just sort of dispatching it, so that folks like yourself can come and offer their testimony, and it doesn't get continued until there are 3 votes up here to do it. So,
okay, fair enough. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and to follow up on my colleagues here, Mr. Thomas, it is extending a courtesy to the applicant. They do pay the cost of the staff for continuing at the work they put into the effort and so forth. And oftentimes there's good reason, and more research is being done, more investigation, and oftentimes when they come back at the hearing, the situation has changed. And so, you know, I've witnessed a number of times where we actually get a better result when there's more time given to do the investigation or whatever, and I am aware of further activity going on in these areas and other considerations being made and that sort of thing. So we'll see when it comes around in November, but really it is more or less a courtesy.
Okay. Well, given that, I'll just say ditto for the C4 and C5. Okay. You know, something occurs to me. Could I make this request that, given the situation with the changing, you know, the end of the term coming up, wouldn't it make more sense for the new board to hear this appeal, to hear this situation? November 25th now, we're coming up to the last couple of weeks, right up against the end of the, you know, where there's going to be a change in the board by at least two members are changing. Wouldn't it make more sense to grant, to continue this until after the new board is sworn in next year? I would recommend that. I think it would be avoid this appearance that this is a last-minute attempt to slip something in here when there may be a vote favorable to the
client in this case. At least that's the appearance to me. And I think that would be avoided by simply continuing it to January sometime.
Well, I think, you know, one could make that argument, but had we heard it today, it would be this board, and so it'll be the same board in November. It isn't really what you speak of. It certainly doesn't apply here, though it could apply in other situations. You know, that is not the motivation on their part, certainly. So, okay. You know.
Fair enough. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That was my last request to speak on this item, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board for action.
Mr. Chair, if I may, one more comment that sometimes it's us, the board, request a continuation, such as we had Mr. Corporal Ellsworth a couple of weeks ago or so, and in my district I requested that we, with the cooperation of the applicant, continue because I have had problems with the project and could give the either side. So it's always, if you can pull something out, and I agree with our chairperson that what's going on, it's going to be more satisfactory probably to your needs and that neighborhood needs than what we could have decided here today. With that, I move continuation of the item.
And second, under the assumption that's till November 25th.
Yeah,
just to clarify, the date specific.
Just to keep the clerk clear, right?
Yeah, well.
Okay, very good. We have a motion and second to continue this item to November 25th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. And with that, we'll move on to item C5. Madam Clerk.
Item C5 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Herbert and Diane Filippone, Oasis Associates, Inc., of the Planning Director's determination concerning application for Certificate of Compliance C07-0313 for two parcels of approximately 3.373 and 3.21 acres in the rural land use category located east of the intersection of Sydney Street and Flora Street, east of the city of San Luis Obispo, 3rd District.
Ms. Manson.
Mr. Chairman, board members, Joe Manson, Planning Information Services Group. Again, we do concur with the applicant's agent, Oasis Associates, to continue this item, and we have set the date of November 25th for the continuance.
Very good. No questions from my colleagues. I'll open it to the public, and I have no request to speak on this item. Beyond what was already said, so I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board.
Move item to be continued to November 25th, Mr. Chair.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we continue this item to November 25th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.